Welcome to Spy Satellites, a podcast about Dune, Imperium, and the people who play it. I'm your host, CJ, and this is Rotation 11, and we're talking about card combos in Dune Imperium Uprising. So join us, why don't you, for a roundtable discussion focusing on cards, combos, atomics, and everything spice. If you like what we do, please give us a like and subscribe, and if you'd like to support us, you can do so on Patreon at patreon.com/hiddenassets. Supporting us helps us continue to produce quality content and gives you access to some pretty awesome perks, including voting for the upcoming podcast topic. So tell your friends and let us know how we're doing. We're always trying to improve the quality of our content, and we can't do it without you, the listener. Tonight, I'm joined by the duo from Consoles, a YouTube channel focused on Dune Imperium Uprising content and strategy. The link to their channel will be below in the description. So let me introduce you to Dino. Dinosaur 11, welcome.
Hello.
And also with us is Che Guevara, or used to be known as Airman, or sometimes is known as Airman. What do you go by now?
I'll go by Che for now, but yeah, I'm Airman on TTS.
Well, I got to say, guys, it was a blast playing games with you at the North Carolina Invitational. I had such a good time. I hope it was a memorable experience for both of you. And it's also great to have you on the podcast finally.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was a pleasure playing Gale Force Dune, especially North Carolina Invitational. That was a ride.
Oh, yeah, man. It's always great to teach people the game. I guess you guys knew the game, right? So it wasn't so bad getting into it.
Yeah.
But it was definitely a memorable experience. But tonight, we're not talking about Gale Force 9, although I would love to do that. Today, we're talking about card combos in Uprising. So Uprising and basically any of the Dune Imperium games with the expansions, they don't have a ton of combos, right? They're kind of written on the surface of the cards themselves, basically like Fremen Bond, or some synergy with Bene Gesserit, right? But we're talking about combos and how you want to go about building your deck and some of the cards you want to focus on before you start going into like a tribal effect or sort of before you go into the Fremen Bond. Like, what do you want to start aiming for when you pick up cards, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, like, I think it's great to talk about it in a more macro perspective and thinking overall when you're going into the game. Because it's so hard to think like straightforward, just like, well, am I going to go for this off the bat? So,
yeah. Well, let's start it off. I think maybe the best place to start is with, let's start with the Fremen. The Fremen are, obviously we already mentioned Fremen Bond. So a lot of things regarding their strategy has to do, or their deck building has to do with finding the cards that synergize best together. And, I'll kick it out to you guys first. Like, what do you think is like the bread and butter like Fremen card that you want to grab off the row in order to lean into a Fremen strategy or a Fremen deck?
I think hands down the best Fremen card, or at least the best to like start with some Fremen synergy, has to be Stilgar. Because, well, first of all, Fremen access, six coster, could be like an easy cheap buy, round one, round two buy possibly. And the reveal effect, very strong, right? Like, because of Stilgar, if you pick it up round one or round two, you're aiming to push for Fremen cards on the on the row, right? Because now it generates two spice slows.
Even 100%.
Even if it's like even playing Stilgar on its own for two troops, very strong. But I mean, we can all agree that Stilgar would be like the best, you know, Fremen card in the deck.
Oh yeah, I think you're right. Let's just go through what Stilgar the Devoted does. He's six cost. He has a Fremen access, he has a blue access and a yellow access, and he gives you two troops on his agent ability, which is quite good. And then he kind of has the Liet Kynes ability from base game Dune Imperium. That's two persuasion for each Fremen card you have in play, including this one when you reveal him. So yeah, I 100% agree with that. He is by himself a very strong card. He's a combat-focused card, gives you access, can buy spice must flows. Where do we go from there, guys?
Yeah, I think actually I would say realistic, but also like more like approachable cards you can think about are Mala Pistol or especially a Northern Watermaster. Cards that like even on play, you don't necessarily feel too bad about playing them, and you don't feel too bad about buying them either. But they also can create some like imbalance in your deck, right? Like, for me as a player who's centers around like Spicemas flow builds, and naturally buying cards that reveal for one persuasion is kind of iffy to me, which is why I would prefer to buy cards that like give me a card draw on play or give me a water on play. So it's like, it's those cards that you can buy like round one, round two, that like, you know, like, oh, I'm stuck with 3 persuasion, I'm stuck with 4 persuasion, where it's like not enough persuasion to break through into those really good cards, but it's also like not too low. So like, you know, what's that one card that I want to buy? And it's like the drawing for me, or like just the water with them.
Yeah, I think a Mala Pistol, probably one of the, I think it's honestly one of the most core Fremen cards in the game. And the reason I think that is it's so flexible. It gives you the blue and yellow access, which is great. Obviously, yellow spaces are great for contracts if you want to do contracts. Blue is just great because you can draw extra cards at Arakeen, so drawing 2 cards with this card is great. But it does give you kind of wiggle room to go into combat, because it has a dagger on reveal. It doesn't have any like great persuasion or anything like that, but it doesn't have any requirements that make you have to have Fremen in order to get value out of it. You know what I mean? So it basically stands on its own, and it's an easy pickup. It's like, yes, this card will basically can fit into almost any deck, but when it's accompanied by other Fremen cards that have Fremen bonds, such as Northern Watermaster, I'm glad you mentioned that card, because I really like this card. I think this card is phenomenal. And just like getting passive to spice, even on reveal with Fremen bond, is a huge deal. Huge deal.
Yeah.
Sometimes it can be a really difficult thing to catch up in spice if you miss the 3 water deep desert, right? And this kind of lets you cut back into that queue of Highliner and get in there and really go for it. So yeah, those are really great cards. What else do we have here?
I think one of the biggest easily slept on Fremen cards is Unswerving Loyalty. That one coster, you know, has no access, which is I guess bad, but revealing for a troop and having the ability to place that troop in on your reveal turn could catch so many people off guard, especially if you're entering combat and you're like down by 2 swords or something, right? There's so many situations where Unswerving Loyalty with that Fremen bot could be so strong. So even if you're just like holding a Mala Pistol and you've played the Mala Pistol and you draw into this, I mean, this has the combat ability, right? 1 persuasion, you know, debatable, but that troop, because in Uprising, we've established that, you know, combat is very strong, right? Winning combats practically wins you games, right? Round 7, round 8, winning those is key. So this card lets you put in troops, but also regenerates those it regenerates the troops that you've put in. So you have some sort of garrison, at least every round. So I think picking up this card, regardless of if you have a Fremen or not, I think this card is strong, even if you don't have a persuasion for like a high cost card.
Yeah.
Okay. I see that, but also like, I get that you center around combat a lot, but I'm also gonna say like, what's your thoughts on buying this card like a round 1 or round 2? Like, are you in favor of that or not?
I think if you buy this card round 1, round 2, you're only buying it because you don't have persuasion to buy another card, right? Like, I think I definitely would pick this card over like a Prepare the Way if I'm sitting on like 3 persuasion and there's no decent card on the row, right? Also, once I have bought this card, you have to realize that since this has no access, you're probably going to have to end up trashing one of your convincings or you'd have to replace one of your convincings with like a Prepare the Way or some format of get rid of convincings, because you don't want to be stuck in a hand where you have double convincings, double dune, and this.
Yeah.
So you'd have to, you know, get rid of one of your non-access cards so that at least you can play this in your hand.
So it works best if you have ways to trash cards out of your deck, or you're just trashing aggressively at Desert Power? No, what is it called? Desert Survival. Desert Tactics, excuse me. And or if you have cards like Mala Pistol that'll draw through your deck faster, or if you're just Muad'Dib who has a really good ring that can help you find those cards faster. So that definitely works. If you're playing someone who's more passive at, like if you're playing the Emperor, you might not want this card in your deck. Yeah. I've not played a Fremen tribal deck much with him, though I have done it occasionally. but it's usually not with this card. Though I don't know why that is. Like maybe it's fine, and I just kind of like chicken out, thinking like I'd end up in one of those situations where I don't have a playable card, you know?
Yeah, I mean with Shaddam, and like his ring is like an S tier card on its own, to the point where like,
yeah,
oh wow, yeah, there's it takes a lot more for me to buy those kind of cards and dilute my deck like that.
That's sure. True. It does kind of fit that same like mold, right? It's meant, yeah, to do the same kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
What do you all think about some of the six costers, like Desert Power, the promo Arrakis Revolt? Like, are those cards, do you think, like, are they comparable to Stilgar? Are they kind of like, you know, can you just build around? Do you have to build around them, or are they just good on their own?
I think a good argument to be made is, if you're sitting on six Persuasion, are you buying Stilgar or are you buying Arrakis Revolt, right? Because having those three swords on reveal, very strong, obviously, because combats are so important. But so is Stilgar, right? Stilgar has those two troops. I think we can all agree that we're probably picking Stilgar over Desert Power. But like, I think Stilgar versus Arrakis Revolt is like is definitely like a good debate to be talked about, because it, yeah, gives you a troop on buy. Problem is, it only has blue access. But really, when you're getting a worm on a non-worm spot, very good, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. What are your thoughts?
I mean, for me, like when I'm, I guess this is kind of personal to me, but when I'm playing, it just feels so committal to have to buy those cards. Which I hate like about that about myself sometimes, when I feel like that like affects me in certain ways when I'm buying cards or not, or even when I feel like I have to buy that card sometimes when it comes on the road, even though it might not be the best for me.
Yeah.
So it's like it's a weird situation for me when I'll say like, but yeah, I think in a vacuum, of course, they're strong because worms are strong. Yeah.
Worms are strong. I mean, Arrakis Revolt being able to blow the wall with a card is kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's insane.
Which means
it's kind of weird. Yeah,
it is weird. It's the only card I think that lets you do that, right? The only like agent effect that lets you do that, and there's no reveals that let you blow the wall, if I'm correct.
Yeah,
So I mean, it is a little spicy. It's a little bit expensive with two spice as its cost, and you have to have hooks, of course. So it's not impossible that you'd buy this and then get in a situation where you don't have hooks or don't have the spice to pay for it. But most of the time, I mean, you're going to be playing this round seven, hoping to get a worm into combat when you've been locked out of it, and hopefully win the game that way. But this card, I think it stands on its own, kind of like Stilgar. They're very similar to me in their roles. They're both combat cards. If you get both of them, like, geez, man. I mean, you're in good.
I think that's just GG's at that point, right?
That's like the perfect scenario, like, of every scenario.
Yeah. Would you build around Arrakis Revolt, though, or would you just, like, just pick it up and move on to some other strategy?
I don't think you can build around Arrakis Revolt. Like, it's not a card that's meant to be built around, other than by like simply trashing your deck so you see this card every round. But like, I think you can play
a sword deck, right?
I mean, I guess a sword deck, but like, even if you're playing a spice of slow deck and you see this card and you're just like, oh, I'm gonna go in one heavy on one combat, just gonna battle, like ram this card in, put a worm in, and win that combat, right? Because that's what most spice and slow players do, right? They, you know, just sit around for a while, sit around by spice and slows, and then are like, one combat, this is my combat, it matches for me, call it a day, and then I'm gonna go back to spice and slows. So this card works with good in any deck. Like, if you see this, I think it's definitely a pickup.
Yeah,
but it's also two-sided though, right? Because once you blow up the wall, you're blowing it up for everybody. So I mean, they're also giving up the potential for other people to put in their worms too and spiral as well, which is why like there's also just a strong argument to be made just to reveal it for like a strong portion of the game when you see it.
No, I agree. That's how I usually do it as well. I don't usually play it to blow the wall. Its play effect is kind of one time in my view.
Yeah, honestly,
you just
want to
do this once.
Yeah.
And also, it's not very good. It's like only got blue access. Yeah. So that's actually an argument for Stilgar just being a better base card to play around or build around. Obviously, it is meant to be built around. Whereas this one just kind of stands on its own, does some good stuff, and probably will win you the game if you can, you know, manage to get a worm in there and double the combat rewards. But yeah, I don't know. I like it. Another card that comes to my mind that is similar to those two cards, the Desert Power and Arrakis Revolt, is Leadership. Now, Leadership has a Fremen access. It costs 5. It has Fremen access and a yellow, and it says in its agent box, for each sandworm you have in the conflict, draw a card. And then it has two persuasion, which is not bad, and one dagger, and it gives you a dagger for every other revealed card that provides one or more daggers. So it's basically like Bashar from Ix-Imo, right?
Yeah, for me personally, it's that two persuasion reveal that just like it'll never be a bad buy for me. Mm-hmm. I guess if that makes sense. But I also find that a lot of times with how I play personally, I'm getting only one dagger out of it, which is kind of sad. But it's just it's my tunnel vision at times when I feel like I have to just trash my daggers early game every single game. And yeah. So I think Dino has a different perspective than me because he tends to keep his daggers more. So actually, I'll, yeah.
Well, if you look at all these cards, hold on before we move on. If you look at these cards, and I'm sorry to cut you off.
Yeah.
Leadership requires daggers. There aren't that many Fremen cards that provide daggers that you really want to pick up. To build your deck out. Like, sure, if you get like Long Live the Fighters or Arrakis Revolt, you're getting extra swords or even Shishakli or something like that. But Stilgar doesn't. Like, Maker Keeper doesn't. Desert Power doesn't. Like, Ecological Testing Station doesn't. Fidaken Stilk Tent doesn't. Mm-hmm. Northern Watermaster doesn't. You know what I'm saying? Like, these cards that, in my view, are more of a core Fremen strategy tend to not work with this card. And so I see people playing this one with like by itself with like a bunch of like Emperor cards or Spacing Guild cards, like maybe the Double Agent or things like that, because they're more flexible. You know what I mean? And obviously we don't need to really belabor this, but it is more or less a Paul card or a Muad'Dib card, right?
Yeah.
It's like you want to draw cards. I mean, it's good for anybody, but it's like a Paul card. You get worms in the conflict, you draw some cards, you get intrigues, so like you are profiting, you're going to crash with leadership. So anyway, continue.
I think my argument to be made was with leadership is that if you pick it up round one or round two before you've trashed like both of your daggers, I think you should keep both your daggers, right? And like, I think leadership is one of those cards that you can definitely build a deck around. Like, especially if you pick up like some Sardar card, like some Emperor cards that have like, you know, swords on them, Shishakli, as we said, you know, even Desert Power, or like that allows you to trash your non-dagger cards, and desert the fact survival. That desert, sorry, no, sorry, yeah, Desert Survival,
yeah,
Desert Survival, the one. Fact that it has a dagger as well that turns into two daggers, and if you keep your deck like rotated well, so it's like you have your leadership with like all your dagger cards, and then your next cycle is like your faction accesses, so that you're playing like. So one turn you're playing like your factions and you're trying to go max points, and the other turn you're entering combat. I think like that's definitely like a valid strategy to play around. Like I think in one of the other previous spy satellites, I think you brought up that was it meme to play like, you know, artillery Kaz or like like that. I think I'm gonna say artillery Kaz is obviously like a valid strategy. But similarly here, like playing leadership with like daggers, I think it's a very good strategy, at least in Uprising, when combat is so much more heavy.
I agree, especially since just that one combat is all you need. You don't need to like do this multiple times. You just need to set it up once, right? And if you have the card and you're like, all right, I'll just go Arakeen, I'll hit ups, you know, I'll just draw some cards at research station, and then, you know, I'll hit some other daggers, I'll go into combat, maybe I'll throw a worm in. Like, you're very likely to take people off guard with this, and you have to, you make people play a little bit more cagey and throw cards in that, or throw troops in they probably shouldn't. So that's nice. Yeah, so I agree with that. I think this card does synergize well with, well, Desert Survival. My big problem with Desert Survival is that you really want to play this card. You don't really want to hold it, especially if it's going to be your Dune card. Like, if you're going to take Dune out of your deck and replace it with Desert Survival, you want to get the value out of it. Otherwise, it's just like a worse like idea. Like you're turning it into a dagger. You know what I mean? Like, so I kind of think that it's anti-synergistic in some ways with Desert Survival because of the on-play effect being so strong. Maybe it's much better with Shishakli, who gives you two daggers and has a Fremen bond. It's like the Fremen bond bump is very strong, so like that thing that works really good. Or maybe just the Long Live, like if you can pick up one of the six or sevens with that, that's a big ask though. Like a five, six, and seven, you're going to be winning the game anyway, probably. Like, you're going to win that combat. But it's such a hard thing to get, like, more than one card that's, like, 6+ in the game, I feel.
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, I'm bad at buying cards. I generally get one good one.
I was going to say, like, I think one of the arguments we made for leadership is the fact that it has Fremen access. So like, even if you, you know, miss your rotation, right? You can still go Frem Kit or like Desert Tactics or like probably Frem Kit, right? And like, if you're sitting with your like another Diplo in your hand, like now you can send your Diplo to a non-Fremen space if you haven't gotten the friendship already. So I think that like that boosts its value simply because it has that Fremen access as well.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
I see from like a mental perspective, like when you buy leadership, like in your mind, do you think that like I have to keep daggers? Because for me, when that happens to me, it's like also part of me thinks like, am I gonna give up a spice sword for like the rest of this game? Or like, like it's that like especially early game, like do I commit to giving up a spice flow for the rest of the game, pretty much like off the bat, and saying
that's
like
a good point.
I'm only gonna go into combats, which I mean it's so viable, but it's like for me and I know for a lot of others too, it's like a principled play tells you that like, oh, you know, buy your prepare the ways, like get your persuasion, buy your spice slows. When it's like when there's also the fully other argument of just like max your deck out in a way that fits like your goal for the game, which it's like.
Which I don't think is, I think we're kind of talking about deck building in that way. I mean, like, obviously this is not the best way to be building your deck all the time. You definitely need to be picking up prepare the ways. You need to be pivoting and getting cards that are good for you. But at the same time, if you find yourself in a situation where you see a core card, like a Stilgar, or even I think a Maker Keeper might be a better core card for Fremen to just build around because it itself is just phenomenal. Yeah. And the value of it is so strong, so high, that then you can just pick up Fremen and profit from it. Same thing with Southern Elders, which is a very open, flexible card that gives you both Fremen Bond access. Yeah. Sorry, it gives you Fremen access, Bene Gesserit access. It has synergy with Bene Gesserit and has synergy with Fremen. So like, I like that. I think that card might be one of my favorite, like, I want to build a tribal deck, but I'm not sure which way to go cards.
Yeah,
it's a really good card. Yeah.
And also like the persuasion being 4 persuasion, it's like the perfect amount where it's like, you're so happy when you're on 4 persuasion and that card comes out. Like,
yeah,
like it's great.
4 is easy. I mean, I think it's 5 is water
reveal as well, right?
Yeah.
Water reveal.
Do you guys like prefer, like, I mean, I almost like say like if for me, it's like, it, like if I'm seeing like Northern Watermaster or Malapista, like I for me, it's almost like instantaneous that I take the water card over like a dagger card or a drawing card. But I don't know about you guys.
No, it is for me too. Yeah. 100%. If I can generate resources either on action or passively by revealing, I will take the card that does that. 100% of the time. I still think, Northern Watermaster, really, really strong card.
Yeah.
I mean, just it does everything. It gets you spice, gets you water. If you can't play it, you just hope you get another Fremen card. I mean, then you pick up Unswerving Loyalty, you get 2 spice, honestly, and you throw in a troop. It's like, what value, you know? That's one of my favorite Fremen cards that builds around. I definitely think, like, you know, things like Malapistol are good core cards, especially if you're drawing a lot. Anyway. So we're kind of swerving a little bit into Bene Gesserit territory. Can you guys identify, tell me about what you think, or if we're going to be doing BG like tribal, or, you know, cards that require having other Bene Gesserit cards in play. And there are quite a few of them in this game. Like, which cards would you be picking up and why?
I think, first of all, I think Bene Gesserit synergy is probably like the weakest of all 4 synergies in the game. But like, if I were to, you know, build like a Bene Gesserit deck, I think one of the easiest pickups is probably like Southern Elders, right? As the 2 troops on synergy. Another one is probably like In High Places, right? I mean, that's obviously like a high demand card, right? But if you're with it and you don't have the 2 spies, playing that card for another spy, as long as you have a Bene Gesserit synergy, right? If you have another Prepare the Way and then you play this card, I like the value is pretty good there.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, it gives you access, so you can do a 2 like espionage, get 2 spies, draw 2 cards. That's not bad. That's not bad.
Yeah. I mean, are there many other like Bene Gesserit like synergized cards in here?
Tread and Darkness, which is a 4 cost. It has green, blue, and yellow, and its agent abilities. If you have another Bene Gesserit card in play, trash a card and draw a card. I find this card like interesting, but never great. Like, I think it's fine.
I think if it had Bene Gesserit access, it'd be like amazing. But like, it just, the lack of faction access in that card just makes it so unappealing to me.
I agree. And since most of the time you're going to be picking up like a prepare the way instead of, you would probably pick up a prepare the way anyway. It's mostly the same card, but you don't have to spend the extra persuasion. You get two prepare the ways instead of one tread in darkness. I've seen people like get value with tread in darkness, like actually getting two tread in darkness and go tread in darkness into tread in darkness, which seems kind of like a waste of your time because I mean, you're not getting one access. You don't have Fremen access or Bene Gesserit access or Emperor access or anything like that. So you're just benefiting from like a late game ability because you need to have all this stuff align in your hand. So it's probably going to happen like round 5, 6, or 7. So it's in my, in my view, it's like a late game kind of effect. But you're doing it with a card that like, you're probably going to be better off just revealing it for two persuasion anyway. Like, what are you exactly doing with this? You're trashing a card out of your deck and you're drawing a card that's going to get you maybe one, maybe two persuasion. So it kind of replaces itself. Ah, it's just such a weird card to me.
It feels so bad because like, I think most of like the Bene Gesserit synergies like center around like trying to get you Spice and Flows, which is like you're playing the two persuasion card to like what, draw another one. It's like, it feels almost like a net zero.
So I think in general, these cards fit best into a different strategy, which is a Spice Must Flow strategy that encompasses all the, a bunch of other factions and a bunch of other cards and just mostly the two costers, right? Things like Sardaukar Coordination, right? Which is a two persuasion card, but has, is very flexible and gives you extra swords. So kind of like a card that almost does everything. It's got like access, deploys troops from random places that usually can't deploy troops from, and you can buy Spice Must Flows, help you with that. So that card's very, very strong and kind of works with these if you're just buying Spice Must Flow. But I don't know if if Tread shows up in the row, and let's say there's
Tread, it's going for most of the game.
It is. And so I think that's very interesting to say, like, some of these cards that are BG cards that seem to be like combo cards, they're really not. They really don't feel like combo, or at least at this point. You know, maybe when we get like an expansion, or if you're doing like a homebrew which has a bunch of different effects, it could be much better. But I think in this case, it's just a wasted kind of two persuasion dagger, like most of the time. And you'd be better off either just getting like a prepare the way and something else. Like, I don't know. Like,
it's funny because like in Ix and Immo, like the Benny synergy was insane, right?
It was
like,
insane.
I actually have a question to you guys. Have you guys ever used a Weirding Woman? Like, I don't think I've ever gotten it.
I've picked up the Weirding Woman. It was a very niche scenario. It's like when you're sitting on like what's it called, like 8 persuasion, and you're Irulan, you pick up a ring. So it's like your first action, you play like prepare the way, and then you go like, and then you play your ring, and then you play to buy like a Weirding Woman, and then now you're sitting on 9 persuasion, so that now you can play your Weirding Woman to a non, like to a non-draw space, and then recall the Weirding Woman because you have a prepare the way. It's niche. It's actually unreal. Like, I think that's the only usable scenario for like Weirding Woman. I'm not saying like, you know, if you're Irulan, I guess you can completely start from scratch. You can just trash out like recon, trash out dunes, and then just sit with like 2 Weirding Womans in your hand because, you know, they could reveal and they have the access. That's fair.
That's okay, I guess. But the thing is, usually there's better things to be doing with your time.
Yeah,
right?
It's
like very, I think you said it. I mean, that's not really a combo card so much as in a card you grab if you're Irulan and you need to have the specific opportunity to use it and bounce it back to your hand to get a Spice Must Flow. Because what else are you doing with it, really? I find it so awkward. I wish it said, just return this card from play to your hand after you play it. Like, what if you just, you could keep playing it? That'd be cool. Like,
that'd be broken. But, what?
No, I don't know if it'd be broken. I don't know if it'd be broken.
It'd be pretty strong. It'd be pretty good for one persuasion. That's
it'd be
sure.
very good for one persuasion. But then again, maybe we only have one in the deck instead of two. Anyway, I'd say like the best Bene Gesserit cards are the ones, and then the ones that create combos or that join combos are the ones that give you spies, really.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of leads into, and I'm sorry to like, you know, buy Bene Gesserit, but you really don't have a lot of combos besides Bene Gesserit Operative, which I think is, and you
a
might agree with me,
card.
One of the best cards in the game.
And the thing with Bene Gesserit Operative is that she plays into any deck. It doesn't matter if you're, if you could combat heavy and still play, what's it called, and still have Bene Gesserit Operative, because
absolutely
you can spy, also it has access, right? That's good. And then having that spy, very strong as well.
Yeah. Plus, it also helps you buy spice misflows. I mean, for some reason, this card gets you spies. It buys spice misflows late in the game if you have two or more spies on the board, which with this card is not hard. It does the thing that gets you the reveal effect. Like it's very, very good. And it's three cost. So it's cheaper than Branching Path or Treadin'. No, it's the same as Branching Path.
But Branching Path is a good card.
Yeah, Branching Path is a fine card, but it's fine on its own, I think. I don't think it has any sort of synergies with any of these other cards. But Treadin' Darkness, you know, like just gets laughed in the face by this other card.
I'm never gonna buy Treadin' Darkness over BGO.
Like. Yeah. So let's highlight some of that. I think like BGO, Bene Gesserit Operative, for me is a core strategy card, a core combo card in this particular type of combo. And why don't you guys like fill in here? Like what other cards fit into this combo?
Branching Paths, I think. Because if you're playing Bene Gesserit Operative, right, it only has one access, which is Bene Gesserit. So if you pick up Branching Paths and you're spamming Bene Gesserit Operative and you're spamming Branching Paths, you're probably going to pick up the Bene Alliance. And that effect of Branching Paths when you trash an intrigue to draw an intrigue, but also gain two spice. I mean, like, insane ability, right? You could get rid of leverage for all you know.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, you end up drawing, like, unexpected allies. Who knows? But you also get two spice off of it. So I think that's one of, like, the core cards. If you pick up Bene Gesserit Operative, like, you should play for this as well.
Yeah. I mean, definitely Branching Path, you could get the alliance with other cards too. It doesn't necessarily have to be BGO, but like the Branching Path effect is very good if you can get that alliance, right? I mean, that's worth playing for sure.
Yeah. You were saying, you know, like what core combos are you playing for Bene Gesserit Operative? So it's like if you're playing BGO, you might as well pick this up.
Well, what's the best card you can get? What's the best card you get BGO? What's the best card that you can get next?
In High Places, for sure.
In High Places,
In High Places, obviously helps you buy Spice Misflows easily. Mm-hmm. Gives you a spot on its on purchase, so it's a five coster. This card's one of my favorite cards in the game as well. Like, I think that the mood of the image on it with the Emperor's back to you, and then Irulan and Margo Fenring. I think it's Irulan.
Is that Margo?
Actually, I don't know who that is.
Mother
Mohaim. Maybe it's Mother Mohaim. It was Irulan and Mother Mohaim. It's hard to tell because this wasn't in the movie. So, I don't know what scene that's from, but it's pretty cool image. And then I'm looking for Public Spectacle. I mean, arguably one of the best cards in the game, right? Mm-hmm. It's a four coster Emperor card, not a BG card, Emperor card, but has a spy icon, and if you recall the spy this turn, get a wild bump. And it has one persuasion for reveal, and it reveals for a spy. So, I mean, the BGO gets you the spies, the public spectacle gets you the extra bumps, rinse, repeat. Like, this is just, I mean, it's a combo that's so obvious. It's just like, it's just good stuff. Always, if you can find BGO and pick up Public Spectacle, you're in the driver's seat. You're going to be racing up those tracks. There might not be anything people can do to chase you down. Like, it's hard to do.
I mean, I think Public Spectacle is good on its own, even without BGO, because of the fact that Public Spectacle reveals for a spy. I mean, it feeds itself, right? I mean, that's a like very strong ability.
But with that being said, I think with BGO, Calculus of Power is one of those, like, I wouldn't say hidden gem, because it's like, I mean, people agree that it's really good, but like, just like, with BGO, just like the amount of how much it like it propels your game forward with trashing, with going to other faction spots, with the spies you get from BGO, and because it reveals for two persuasion, like it's it's like a triple whammy of like goodness.
Yeah, I think at the center of this spy strategy or spy synergy decks is Bene Gesserit Operative. It spreads out into everything, right? It spreads out into the Fremen, right? Where we can get the Rebel Supplier, which is on paper, like kind of a card that you might not want to buy because it doesn't have any persuasion. It does reveal for spice though, which is awesome. But it says, if you recall the spy this turn, you get two troops, which by the way, is like a Stilgar. Like that is Stilgar's effect. But
and the
there's
fact that it
cost.
Has the ability to draw a card too, right? Because you're getting a spy back.
Yep, you either infiltrate or you draw a card. So it's doing slightly more. Or you kind of have to set it up to do more, but that's still It's easier to pick up a Rebel Supplier as there are two in the deck and only one Stilgar. But yeah, so we have that synergy. We have the Bene Gesserit Operative. We have Public Spectacle Rebel Supplier synergy. We have Strike Fleet, which is one of the most insane cards. Will win you games if you buy it early kind of cards.
And the fact that it's 5 persuasion is 2 is insane, right?
5 persuasion gives you a spy. And yeah, so it basically powers itself once.
I'm looking at Strike Fleet and also seeing a dangerous rhetoric as well, which means it's one of those cards that you got to buy if you see it.
Dangerous rhetoric. Tell us about it.
I mean, just, okay, people say, okay, it trashes, but it gives you the potential to get a double bump in a faction, which in Uprising, I mean, first of all, the card itself is like, it goes to a green, a Landsrat spot or a spy spot, and it gives you a faction bump on play, and it trashes itself on play. So, I mean,
yeah.
Off the bat,
it's
like,
a power play. It's like a power play.
Yeah, which is insane in Uprising, right? Because, like, other than a Public Spectacle, there's like, it's kind of in like a, I guess, overthrow. If you have overthrow, it's kind of hard to get these double bumps in.
It is.
So,
I mean, we can't really talk about the spy strategy without talking about Guild Spy, right? I mean, that's I think that's like a gem that we haven't talked about yet.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, I mean, the spacing synergy in this deck is just like, all right, like, let's.
I mean, it's like operative, right? If you get Vengeance Operative in like round one. Or like, you know, and then you play it round two, round three, and then now you have two spies, one on espionage and one on like spacing. Like now you're just sitting on like what, two spies, and the fact that this Benedict Operative allows you to, you know, get 3 persuasion, and then along with Guild Spy, if you had that, that's 5 persuasion on its own.
Yeah.
Like you go High Council, that's 7, and now you're just, if you can just keep printing spice slows, you're also getting faction bumps. I mean, right. Guild Spy, one of like the best cards in the game for spy synergy.
Low-key shameless plug, but like in Dinosaur posted a video where he got a round 6 win with Guild Spy. Yeah,
I did watch that.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, it was a Jessica too. Which is
it's just like, I mean, that card's like a powerhouse on its own. You can't. Yeah, it's like.
That was a mad crazy Jessica game. You had honestly, where you like drew 4 like, cards or something with her like flip ability, and then you doubled the espionage effect. Like, holy crap, like you were sitting on your entire deck that round with Guild Spy in hand. I was like, wow, that's how you do it.
That's how you play Jessica.
That's the only way to do it. The problem with Jessica is that that's her one trick. It's just like, well, you go Guild Spy, you go espionage, round one, round two, double rewards, call it a day. Now you're sitting on 2 spies. And nobody can stop you because you're probably never removing those spies.
Yep. No, that's great. Very strong. Yeah, Guild Spy, very, very strong card in the spy strategy. Getting it by itself is still okay, but it itself, I think, that's a build around almost card. You really just want to grab as many spy cards as possible and go to espionage as soon as possible once you get that. But if you can... It's gonna be hard for people to chase you up those tracks, man. I mean, unless they just
the
cut you off.
The crazy part is like the fact that you get a spy on buy, like the pack it powers itself on the like the second that you buy it. That's actually insane too, and just for 3 cost.
I can't believe, honestly, can't believe it's 3 cost. It gives you a spy for 3. Like, is the only other card that does that that's even remotely close is Spy Network, which has no access. And it is a good card by itself. I think Spy Access or Spy Network, excuse me, is very good. It's a 2 coster that has no agent ability and no access, but it reveals for 2. It replaces your convincing arguments, and it has a dagger. And it says if you have 2 or more spies on the board, you can recall a spy to get an intrigue card. So another synergistic card with Bene Gesserit Operative, and even Guild Spy. But like with Guild Spy, to be able to do this with 3, and it'll like move you up tracks fast, like when you buy spiceless flows, that's almost like compounding the effects. Like you get a point here and you're gonna get a point here and you're gonna get a point here. It's like, come on, that's so much.
I don't think the spy network, like I don't think the reveal effect is like what you should be highlighting. I think it's the fact that it has 2 tags, you know. It has emperor and spacing, right? Like there's so many spacing cards. Like obviously we'll get into spacing soon, but like there's so many spacing cards that just, you know, are like, oh, discard a card. But if you discard a spacing build card, now you can draw 2 cards, or like you can draw another card. or you can draw an intrigue, because you know Guild Spy has that action ability too, right? Like honestly, the action ability is very strong on its own, right? Round one, or like early in the game when you're not pushing for spicy slows, the fact that Guild Spy has, you know, access, and you've picked up another spacing guild card like Spy Network, now you can discard that Spy Network, and now you get another intrigue and you get another card. I mean,
100%.
This keeps going, right?
Yeah, it also is a great outlet for Calculus of Power, because you get your spy out of it, even if you reveal it, get an intrigue, and then like calculus it, trash it, get some daggers. Like, that's very strong. But yeah, you're right. I mean, Spy Network, the reveal is sometimes relevant. Most of the time, it's just a convincing argument with a dagger, which it's fine, but it gives you a spy, and those tags are just very, very synergistic. All right, well, let's I think obviously, you know, there are a lot of really strong cards that deal with spies. Like Wheels Within Wheels is just a great Emperor Spacing Guild card. Again, another card that has two tags that we need to highlight eventually, right? But gives you a spy on reveal, and spies on reveal are very powerful. Very powerful. Covert Ops, which gives you two spies. I think this card's a little bit underappreciated. It's very annoying. But it's two spies on reveal, so it catches you up with the spy game. Imperial Spymaster, like another very strong payoff card. Like, these are all kind of payoff cards a little bit, right? Yeah. Maybe not the Wheels Within Wheels. The Wheels Within Wheels, I think you can just reveal it and be happy. But like Imperial Spymaster, you want to play it and get the intrigue, right? I mean, that's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, also, even with spacing cards, like the cards that make you discard to draw more space. If you try to discard a spacing card, you draw more. Or like, actually, all three of us were in a game with Cheezable, if you remember that. Where?
Yeah, I remember that.
He had just that synergy with the spacing.
Yeah, let's actually talk about that, because that game was kind of eye-opening for me and how bad I was at this game at the time. No, like, so, but really, the amazing synergy he had, as he was talking about, he got like space-time folding. Double agent. He had like, did he have Guild Spy or not?
I think he had Guild Spy.
I think he had Guild Spy, and he had like Guild Envoy. He had Guild Envoy for sure.
He had Guild. Oh. I think he had Guild Envoy, and I think he had Spacing Guild's Favor, where he was discarding. Yeah, Spacing Guild's Favor.
I don't think he had Guild Spy. I don't think there was Guild Spy.
I think it was just Spacing Guild's favor. Yeah, I think he had Spacing Guild's favor. So Spacing Guild's Favor. We're talking about now this tribal effect of, it's kind of tribal of Spacing Guild, but the effect is to discard cards to draw cards, which is very good, because drawing new cards, discarding the cards you don't need and drawing the cards you do, makes your hand better. Yeah. So you can buy Spice Mist Flows. So like cards like Spacing Guild's Favor, which to me is that bread and butter card for this sort of strategy to get the discard synergies going, because it itself is a payoff card. When this card is discarded, get two spice. It also draws you a card for some reason. So it just draws you a card too. And then it reveals for two persuasion. And this card does everything. And if you pay three spice, you can get a free wild bump. So that's insane. This card costs five. It has Spacing Guild access and yellow access. I mean, if you're going to go for a Spacing Guild, like, this card's just good, generally. Yeah, you don't have to get it for the synergy. Like, you can just get it and just benefit from the draw and the access and the sometimes bump, right? Mm-hmm. And the persuasion. It's not a choose, either. It's a two persuasion and, which is a little nuts, I think. But if you get that and you get Guild Envoy being basically a better version of your diplomacy, and it makes you discard a card, and if you discarded a Spacing Guild card, you draw two, then you're singing, then you're humming. And that's what Cheezable did in that game, right?
Yeah. And in that game, he got, well, let's admit it, he got pretty good draws again and again and again.
That's true.
With that combo. But yeah, I mean, it was so good.
It was so, so good. So if you're looking for that kind of synergy, Spacing Guild's Favor first, I'd say. Even though I'd say like picking up a Guild Envoy is fine. Like, I'd probably do it because of the access. It's just a flexible card. And then if you buy a Spice Mist Flow, you can discard the Spice Mist Flow to draw two cards.
That's like the best feeling, I think
that's like one of the best things that, you know, they've done with Uprising, is the fact that they've labeled Spice Mist Flow as a Spacing Guild card. Yeah. I think that's like one of the best improvements to the game.
I agree.
Because now the spacing guild synergy is so real, right?
Yeah, I 100% agree.
And also, one of the easy things to pick up early on, I think, is just like space time folding, right? I mean, it has the ability to discard a card to draw a card. If you get that with spacing guild's favor, obviously now you're sitting with two spice, but you also get double draw. I think spacing guild's favor, like, I think on its own could be good, but like definitely very heavy with the spacing guild synergy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Space-time folding is interesting, too. There's just one in the deck, and it costs one persuasion. It has guild access, which is kind of insane. It's like one of the lowest-cost cards in the game with access, right? I don't think there's any other card
it's the lowest, yeah, for sure.
There's only one in the game, but, you know, you're going to be wanting to... You want to build a spacing guild deck if you get space-time folding.
Yeah.
Though it's just sometimes just good to discard a card to draw a card. Like... That's fine. Mm-hmm. Cycling out a bad card from your hand, like, oh, I've got the stupid Dune. I hope I draw my convincing to buy a Spice Must Flow or whatever, or my Stilgar. Like, it's just a good card to cycle through your deck. I think it might be like a first turn pick. I'd pick up Space Time Folding and anything else I could find, maybe over some other like very strong single cards, honestly.
I mean, it's a very, very, very strong Irulan card, I think. I mean,
yeah.
Like, you pick it up, you know, round one, and now you just go to deliver supplies with it. Because, I mean, now you just have it in your hand.
Very strong.
Very strong, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm picking it over any non-access card for sure, I think, yeah.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. We also have a couple of other interesting cards that work with this discard synergy. There's Captured Mentat, which I also think is just by itself a very, very good card. It's 5 costs, gives you green and yellow. And its agent ability is discard a card in order to get an intrigue card and draw a card. That for me is where this card shines, is just getting the free intrigue card.
The intrigue on is access. Great. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're going to be cycling through your deck faster. Drawing cards, in my opinion, is one of the strongest things you can do in Uprising because it finds you your combo pieces faster, finds your Stilgars or your strike fleets or whatever you need to do. It also has a weird reveal, which I think is sometimes a very good reveal, but it's also a little bit goofy sometimes. It's like one persuasion, and then you can go down with a faction and up with a faction. And I've seen people do this with Irulan and Margot, and just go up and down with their trigger, a level 2 on their respective tracks, right? Like the Bene Gesserit track for Margot and the Emperor track for Irulan, and you just get your bonus effect again. That's fine, but the real benefit of that card is when you can like go down a faction you're losing and go up a faction you can win, like especially late game. And I've seen that happen a lot, and it's very strong. But this card by itself is just good and can be a nice build around, just like the Spacing Guild's favor. Like, and if you get both of these cards, that's powerful. Like Captured Mentat, discarding Spacing Guild's favored, getting an intrigue, drawing a card. That feels good. Like getting two spice. Very strong, very strong. So I'd say those are probably the best two build arounds in my view for this kind of discard synergy stuff, if you were going to go for it. But
I think Dino would agree with me when I say like entries are so, you know, on an average, pretty good in Uprising to the point where if I'm going to like Assembly Hall, hell yeah, give me two intrigues.
Yeah.
Just like,
or even Mentat itself, right? Now you can see an intrigue, and then if you don't like that intrigue, well, it's like, okay, well, I'm gonna get rid of it, and then see another intrigue, right? And the fact 100%. That it draws you a card too, so now you've gone to Mentat, you've returned yourself in action, and you've seen two intrigues and two draws.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
very powerful, especially on that space.
Yeah,
I mean, I think Captured Mentat probably like I don't know. This is like a good question, but. Would y'all early reveal for Captured Mentat? Is that like an early reveal kind of card?
Ooh. Is there anything else good in the row? Like if there's cards in the row, then I probably would not. If it's the only card in the row and everything else is like Desert Survival, maybe an Imperial Spymaster, maybe like a Sadakar Soldier, maybe I would, but... You know, there's a lot of good cards in Uprising. There are a lot of good cards. There's less bad cards in Uprising than in base game and in
Extended. That is true. Yeah.
So I always feel like there's something good to buy no matter what. But I would buy this card for sure over many other cards. But I don't know if I'd early reveal for it. to me, it feels like giving up an action in order to profit and maybe get like neutral on actions with it feels a little bit like that isn't something I want to do. If it comes around to me, I'd probably pick it up for sure. What do you guys think?
I can see myself doing it. I can see myself earlier doing for this card.
Early, really?
But okay. I'm just like that kind of a guy. I'm just like, like, let's just send it and see if I can. Okay, I have a mindset of trying to get lucky, which it's I don't know if it's good or bad, but I love getting intrigues and I love playing around intrigues.
I mean, if you're like, I think you're at a good position to win the game if you've seen around like 8 or 9 intrigues. I think if you've seen or like 7 to 8 intrigues, I think is like a good portion of intrigues to see. So if you've seen like 7 to 8 intrigues, 6 of them are guaranteed to be good. Like, it doesn't matter what you pick up. Yeah. Like, 6 of them are pretty much like guaranteed to be good. Like they could generate you spies, or they could, you know, get like buy access, or like the, you know, discarding for like one of the bumps, one slur for one of the bumps. Like, 6 of them are like guaranteed to be good. Or that's like the average luck, or to say, based on like my little like analysis that I did. But so if you see like, if this captured Mentat, if you're seeing more intrigues, I think that just increases your chances to win the game in general. But I don't know if I'd give up an action just to see like 1 or 2 more intrigues. That's also, like a...
Yeah. There's some easy situations. Yeah. Yeah, action and do it, I think, is much for sure. I would never early reel without playing anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, for this, it's not worth it.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely not worth 2 actions. But like the question is it worth 1 action, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I think I probably wouldn't. And the reason is that most of the time I'd find something comparable that is just as good, but I'd get my action back.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That something else will come up is.
But I mean, there could be situations where that doesn't happen. And, you know, maybe you end up with like a delivery agreement and a priority contract and a two weirding woman and then that card. And then hell yeah, I'm revealing for it early. Like that's, yeah. I don't want to go down the double contract route. That's just a nightmare.
Yeah, I've tried it like so many games and it's like, I'll get it off sometimes and I'm just like, and I won't even win. I'm like, damn.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just
what's
my
the
whole
double
game.
Contract
route?
The priority contracts where you you double contract with priority contracts into secure contracts.
Yeah.
Like, that's fun.
Good I can see with like Interstellar Trade. Like that's the only good synergy that I can see with it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, 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 for sure. You get Interstellar Trade and then I can see like, yeah, priority contracts is pretty good, but Interstellar Trade by itself, I don't know if that's is that a strategy? Is that a combo? I don't know if it's a combo.
No, it's
it
like,
just
it's
feels
like
not. It's just like get contracts and then you reveal this thing like wait, for like 9. Well, Paul almost got it to 6. I think got to 6 in a video.
He
got 6 contracts. Maybe it was 7, but it was pretty high. That was at the first North Carolina Invitational, and that was like pretty insane to see. But I've seen some pretty cool stuff with Interstellar Trade. It's just a very strong card on its own. And so, yeah, obviously priority contracts, those are good. But, I mean, the question you asked was about captured Mentat and whether I would early reveal for it. And I think most of the time, no. That's just...
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair.
I get that, yeah. It's so... I mean, but with that being said, would you early reveal for... would you early reveal no actions for Guildspy?
Guildspy? I think... It depends on what leader I'm playing, right? Like, if I'm playing Paul or like, Muad'Dib or like Gurney or something, I don't think I'm picking up Guildspy like round one without getting action, right? Because their rings are kind of good, so it's like, I think the only leaders that are pick up like Guildspy without an action is probably like Fade and Jessica. I think those are like the only two leaders that I can think of.
That's a good point.
I don't know. Let me see. Like, what other leaders could possibly be?
I think for Jessica, for sure, because you can almost guarantee that you're going to be getting, like, you'll be able to see it the turn you need it. Whereas, I think for Fade, I guess I could see that because you're just going to be getting a lot of spies anyway. Yeah, maybe, but I don't know. Like, giving up 2 actions, man.
Yeah,
that's rough. That
makes me think so hard.
You find yourself so far behind sometimes, and I don't know if Guildspy will entirely catch you up. Like, it depends on maybe if you're second position, and you do it, then your first position, your first to act next action, but then you don't have any spice to go to hit espionage, and then you feel bad. You know what I mean? Like, That's a tough one. I think maybe definitely like I would second action reveal for it if I'm first position 100% of the time. Like I think that card is just nuts. But you force people into situations where they have to or you're going to do it. And then they're kind of behind. Like, and if they get like, if they're fourth position picking up Rebels, not Rebel, Guild Spy, then like you don't feel too bad because you're probably going to outpace them anyway. And, you know, other people kind of overcorrect sometimes against that card. You know what I mean? So, I mean, it can definitely be good and bad. I think it definitely depends.
One of the leaders that I mentioned to, like, I left out was Staban. I think Staban is definitely like a,
oh yeah.
I think if you're Staban, you double, like, I'm fine with giving up two actions for Guild Spy. I think Morphling would agree with this.
I think he'd agree with it. I think, I don't know. Maybe he definitely do it second action. I don't know if he'd open reveal for it, but like I think I've seen people open reveal for Guild Spy with Staban, and I think done very well. But I think it depends on what else is in the row too. Like if you have like six persuasion and you're picking up Guild Spy and something else like decent, like maybe you're picking up like a double agent, maybe then. Or like a Guild Envoy. Oh, yeah, that feels good. But if you're picking up just that, then your next buy is going to be good, but your hand is going to be bad. Like you're going to have, you know what I mean? Like if you have three persuasion and then you have your ring, Esteban, that feels bad because your ring is so good, Esteban. You don't want to miss playing your ring.
That's true.
So I don't know. I think he might say like maybe if you don't have your ring. That's what I guess that Morphling would say. Morphling is our resident like master of Staban, by the way. Yeah, he's the Staban master. Definitely the best Staban player I've ever played against. So all right. Mm. So we've got that synergy. We're covering a lot of ground here. Honestly, there's so many things to talk about.
Yeah.
Let's briefly cover, and we're at about an hour now. We're at 56 minutes. So let's cover the Calculus of Power combos and the Emperor combos that we kind of we've briefly touched on as parts of other combos, but how do they sort of fit if they're your first pickups? What cards do you pick up in Emperor that are going to help like speak to an overall strategy of combo cards?
Hands down, Sardaukar Coordination. I mean, I think that's the obvious one, right? I mean, it just builds around Emperor synergy in the reveal. You know, it has two persuasion on reveal. Yeah, very good for Spice of Slows, but also has like a, you know, like, oh, swords. You know, you get a couple of Emperor cards going. Now you're sitting on like two or three, like three or four swords. Plus you've got a Spice of Slow, and you can catch other people off guard if you have enough Emperor cards in your deck.
Yeah, I agree.
I actually just love how, like, with the Emperor cards in Uprising, a lot of it is centered around, like, reveal effects, which it just feels so much easier and better to do. Like, it's like from like a mental perspective, when I'm playing the game and I'm buying like a say a Sardaukar Soldier with the Imperial Spymaster or Calculus, like it feels so much better to me, like knowing that like I don't have to actively think about like, oh, I'm on my last action, what happens if I draw into like an Emperor card, when no, it's like it's on reveal for most of the time. It's like it's like a huge weight off my shoulder when I'm playing around this synergy. But I just love it.
I mean, one of the Emperor cards that we have to highlight is Corrin City, right? I mean, it has no like reveal. I mean, it has no like persuasion on reveal, but I mean, five Solari on, you know, reveal, plus like a, it feeds itself. I mean, like you can get Swordmaster with this card, or you can, you know, go to like Dutiful Service, get a faction bump, and also get like a point for discarding two cards. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a discard synergy, but you know, the Emperor synergy could possibly play here.
That's true. I've never seen that happen.
Yeah, I almost like don't see it as Emperor. Actually, half the time when I play it, it's like almost, it's so standalone. It's like if I'm buying that card, it's either I'm making my game around it, or it's just like give me that persuasion right now, kind of, or like, give me that Solari like right now.
That's fair. I can see that argument too.
Yeah.
So I guess the obvious combo with Corinth City is another card that's very strong. Price of is no object. It's kind of like almost, they do similar things, right? Price is no object might be up there with my top three cards in the game. I think it's very, very, very strong. It has six cost when you buy it. It gives you two persuasion. It's Emperor Bene Gesserit card. It has Emperor and Bene Gesserit access, and its agent ability says you may acquire a card to your hand using Solari instead of persuasion. So it essentially is a way, it's kind of like the Tlaloxu Master of on play effect from Immortality, but you have to buy the card. So most of the time people buy Spice Must Flows with this, right? I mean, that's, it's turn $9 into a point, which is crazy. And you can do it while going to faction accesses and getting points, right? So you're kind of getting half a point, getting a point by playing it. So it feeds itself in that way. And also the reveal is 2 persuasion. So it helps you buy Spice Must Flows if you can't do it that other way. And it gives you 2 Solari. So,
I mean, I think one of the, like, the useful scenarios for Price is No Object is like use, you know, it's like round 3 and you're sitting on like, you know, like 6 or 7 Solari because you've gone Spice Refinery, or, you know, round 2. And now you put like Long Live the Fighters or like Interstellar Trade into your hand with like, with Price is No Object. And now you just have like a, like a S tier card, or like even Overthrow, right? Like you go round 1, like action 1, you go like Espionage, you know, get a spy, and then you have Overthrow in your hand. And you're like, okay, well, what alliance do you want to chase? Because based upon that, now you change the game plan of other people, right?
Yeah. Like, it's also so strong that it also has Emperor and Bene Gesserit access in it, like as its thing. So you can also get a card that even builds on the synergy itself because it already has those icons as well. Which is like, it's so good. It feels so good to do that.
That's a really good point, because if you are going to end up playing this card, you would like to have one or two things that combo with the Bene Gesserit tag, maybe. Like, maybe a Prepare the Way, which is very... Well, that doesn't really matter that much, but I guess things like Tread in Darkness or, I guess, Southern Elders. There aren't that many Bene Gesserit combo cards.
I think more Emperor. I think Emperor cards.
Sure.
Yeah. But I'm also...
Had a game. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, like, I had a game where I went Price of No Object to Espionage, and I was sitting on like 6 Solari, and I was like, what's on the row? And it was Southern Elders. So then I just go, you know, I go Espionage, Southern Elders to Desert Tactics, and now I'm like winning the combat, right? And I get a trash off. So like, I think that synergy for me was so like powerful.
That's
like
crazy.
That Southern Elders synergy there is very good there.
Wow. Yeah, that's insane. I mean, it's a very flexible card. It lets you do a lot of busted stuff. That's a very good example. Yeah, that's awesome. Pick it up, then head into, get extra troops. 3 troops, right? Plus the 2 you could normally send in. Yeah, that's powerful. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How about Calculus? Calculus of Power. Interesting 3-cost Emperor card that has blue access and spy access. It trashes a card on play, and then it reveals for 2 persuasion and has the text, trash another Emperor card you have in play in order to get 3 daggers. What do you guys think of this one?
The reveal is like, it's iffy for me. The reveal, it's like, it's so hard for me to decide when to trash, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like with certain cards. I mean, with certain cards, like if I'm buying Sardaukar Soldier, which is just like when trashed, you get an intrigue. Of course, I'm going to trash that. But with some Emperor cards, it's like, there's merit to me trashing or not trashing it on reveal. So for the most part, for me personally, when I have Calculus, I'm playing it for most of the rounds.
Yeah,
like it's.
I think the only main you're only trashing an Emperor card for those 3 swords if you have to win the combat. Like in no other scenario, or like are you like basically willing to trash unless it's Sardaukar Soldier, right? I know some people who trash like Public Spectacle or a Treacherous Maneuver from Calculus Power, but it was like round 7 or round 8, but like, they got 3 swords off of it, and you know that pushed them up for like combat, and they won the combat off of it. It's very situational. Like it's you're not usually just using Calculus to, you know, instantly trash, right? Instantly trash on reveal for the reveal effect. You're mainly playing Calculus to, you know, go to a spy space, assuming that you have like a spy on one of the faction spaces, and then you get a trash off. That's your early game like ability for Calculus. Late game, you know, the reveal could be useful if you have like an Emperor card. You know, pushes you for combat. That's it. Like that's my thoughts on it, at least.
Do you even bother like hunting for an Emperor card with this, or do you just play it for value?
No, you definitely should hunt for an Emperor card, right? Like if you at least you should hunt for an Emperor card when you have this in your rotation. So, the way I'm talking about it, I'm saying like, so you've just played this card, right? And now you've played this card and you've bought another Emperor card. So now this card and that other Emperor card are in your discard together.
Right.
So now you can rotate them together on your next hand. Like, if you can find a way to, you know, manage that Emperor card and this one together, I think, I mean, it's like very good, obviously, right? Mm-hmm. So I think you should definitely hunt for an Emperor card. Yeah. Like, that's my answer.
Yeah, the cool thing about it is you obviously get the effect on whatever card you trash first because of the way that cards resolve. You can choose the orders of taking their effects. So, like, you can take a Treacherous Maneuver, get the Intrigue card and the Persuasion, then trash it out of your hand. That is out of play. That is such a weird thing to do, though, because usually Treacherous Maneuver, that kind of card, and as you mentioned, most of these cards, the Emperor cards, want to be played. Actually, they want to be revealed. You don't want to lose them out of your deck. Like, yeah, and Treacherous Maneuver kind of wants to be played, but it's one of the most difficult cards to get to play. Like, trash this card and an Emperor card from your hand to gain two influence. Like, that is not that's like Magical Christmas Land most of the time. Like, if that can happen, I don't see it being played for that. I see it mostly used to just draw an Intrigue, like, passively,
or play it as a diplomacy. Yeah,
or play it as a diplomacy. Yeah. It's just a diplomacy that sometimes passively gives you an Intrigue and may give you two persuasion or two influence, during the game, but probably won't. Mm-hmm. But for me, like, Calculus, I just think of Calculus as just an all around great card. Like, it's got blue access, which is nice. But the spy access, if you have like BGO going or you're just, you know, buying some spy cards, this card is incredibly flexible. And I think that the trashing cards out of play helps you find those other Emperor cards that you might be hunting for or trying to get into the same hand. So it does kind of like work. It does its own work, kind of, which is nice.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I think,
I mean, one of the good Emperor cards I think we like haven't highlighted, or I mean, it's a spacing good card too, is Undercover Assets, right? Yeah. I mean, the fact that you, what's it called? You can ignore any argument, any like influence requirements. Very good, but like those two tags, it can work with the spacing good like discard synergy, or it can work with like the Emperor reveal synergy, right? You can get those two swords, or you can get a spy, but you can also, you know, trash it with Calculus Power, maybe trash it with Treacherous Maneuver, for like another like bump, or like another three swords for Calculus. I think that one, it definitely stands out as an Emperor card, or like Emperor like spacing good card.
Yeah. And that one actually works with a lot of synergies because it gives you that spy on reveal. So works with all those cards that require you to recall, like Rebel Supplier, as aforementioned, or like even the leadership, because it gives you two daggers. So it's going to give you three daggers with the leadership. I don't know if I think I've seen that once or twice, like, but generally speaking, like, it's just a good all around card. And that ignoring influence requirements gets you ahead of the queue, right? I mean, this card is good. It's just good, right?
Yeah,
I pick this card
yeah,
up in general just for its effect more than so for a synergy. But if I end up in a synergy of Emperor or Spacing Guild, I'm not sad, right? So yeah, that's a nice thing about it. Yeah, good points. Yeah, we covered a lot. You know what? I forgot to mention, we didn't talk about Chani, actually, in Fremen deck.
Yeah.
How do we forget about Chani? So let's do that real quickly. It's kind of backtracking a little bit, but then we'll jump to maybe the last word and then move on. But Chani, Clever Tactician, is 5 costs of Fremen, and it has Fremen access blue and yellow. And its agent is, if you have 3 or more units in the conflict, get an Intrigue card. Very, very good. And its reveal is retreat 2 of your troops to get 4 daggers. So basically your troops come back, but you stay at the same strength, which is very nice, and is Fremen bond to persuasion. What do you guys think of this one for a tribal deck?
I think it's, like, both, yeah, it's so good, but also for me, what happens actually a lot of times when I get Chani is, of course I'll reveal her and I'll retreat, but I'll, so many times for some reason I don't get the persuasion off, the Fremen bond persuasion. I know it's a good card, I never will regret buying it, but it's just like damn, like, it's like, should I have played it instead? I don't know. It's,
you're mainly playing it if you have like the, if you have 2 troops already, or like 1 troop in, and then you go like Frem Kid and now you deploy 2 and then get another Intrigue.
Yeah,
I think that's like its main use, right? Or desert tactics, right?
Yeah,
but like it's because it has the Fremen access that you're playing it, right? And mostly you're playing Chani to a Fremen space, or I guess to like a worm space, you know, because then it's the her ability reads units, so worms are also considered units. So, and those are the only like usable Chani things. But like, I think you should also be searching for Fremen, right? I mean, if you're playing Chani, because like the Fremen bond, two reveal, very good. And the reveal effect, like, strong on its own, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think that
is she like a she like a early reveal card? Probably not, but
probably not.
Yeah. But I mean, like, I would probably pick her up if you see her.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'd early reveal for her, but I would never be sad not having, like, you know, if I got Chani, I'd never be sad with her. It's like, she's always useful. Any card with access in this game, I think, is like at a premium because of how few cards actually feel like they have access. Like, there's a lot of two ofs cards that don't have access, right? There's two Unswerving Loyalty, two Desert Survival. You know, there's like two Double Agent, which is fine. There's Smuggler's Harvester, which are two ofs. You know, there's a lot of these like derpy cards that are fine, but don't give you access. But having like a five coster that gives you access to a particular thing just feels so much better. It, as you said earlier, frees up your diplomacy to go somewhere else. So that's a really, really important thing. But yeah, I don't know. I don't really see her as like the, like, you definitely want to pick up Fremen, but I don't know if I like go out of my way. Maybe this is a problem with me and building like Fremen, but for her, I'll just use her on her play effect. Cause I value intrigues almost more than I value those, like getting those troops out of the combat. Unless I like, you know, have no other way to generate troops. Like, generally, like, look for ways to generate troops as well. So
maybe that's
just a play pattern thing for me. Like, any card that generates troops, I generally like. That Fidakin Still Tent, love that card. Love that card. You know, reveals for a water and gives you a troop when you go to a maker space. Jeez, man. I mean, that card is incredibly powerful when you throw in like two worms and an extra, you know, two worms, two troops, and an extra troop. That's powerful.
Mm-hmm. For me, it's so hard to buy cards that don't have persuasion. It's like,
I think that might be your problem there.
Yeah, it literally is, and I'm trying to like get past that, but it's like, it feels like so hard for me to like know that like I'm giving up a potential point somewhere along the way.
Like, well, you just gotta think about, like, make sure you play those cards. Like, I think those cards are generally gonna be played. Or if you like have absolutely no way to buy Spice Must Flow that round, then reveal it. Or if like you get to a situation where you might potentially draw it, don't draw. Like, and you don't want to, you know, then you have to just go like, I have to go next round because it's not in my hand. It's like one of two cards in my deck, and if I draw it, I'm not going to get my Spice Must Flow. Just don't take that risk, you know, like, or, you know, if you're in a tournament and you have a 50-50 shot, maybe take the risk, you know, or something like that. But I don't know. Like, I feel like I agree. I used to be like that too, but I think that those cards, playing this, are like Beast Spoils, like Fidakin, Still Tense, even Undercover Asset. Undercover Asset doesn't have any persuasion either. I mean, I probably wouldn't buy too many of these cards, especially like Rebel Supplier doesn't either. Like, that can hurt you in the long run, but you have to have a backup plan, right? You have to have, like, I'm going combat, so I will augment my lack of getting Spice Must Flow by just winning more combats. Like, if you're leaning into that, then you're hoping the table doesn't correct and go after you, right? As Cheezable say, like, hopefully you're just the wolf, like, or there's only one other and not two other, something like
that. I think when you bring up, like, Beast Spoils, I think the value of Beast Spoils has dropped since Uprising came out. Like, originally it was just like, oh, you know, combat is such the meta. Now you just go Beast Spoils and, you know, just win the game. Or, like, not win the game, but, like, you know, those three swords are nice. But I think like, now people aren't picking up Beast Spoils, like, as much. Like, people are still picking it up, but, like, it's not, like, the frequency is, like, dropped, I think. Simply because, like, one, it has no persuasion, right? And usually when people win games, like, winning games requires you, like, to get a Spice Slow, right? Unless combat, you know, you're just going Beast Spoils, starting card coordination, leadership, and, you know, like, you just go like straight up into combat, right? That's good for like a Beast Spoils strategy, but like mainly, like, if it's not generating you like resources, I don't think you would pick it up as much. That, like, that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it works great. Like, say you see in the row a Beast Spoils and a Calculus of Power in the same turn. Then it looks pretty good, because if you can cycle back into them and win the next combat, like, almost guarantee to win the next combat with six extra daggers.
Yeah.
That's looking good. But I mean, again, if this is like board awareness versus, like, you know, best case scenario, like, I'd say that Beast Spoils does have synergy with Calculus of Power in getting those combos to work. But at the same time, it probably only works early on. Like, it probably only is going to get you those wins, like, first couple of rounds. And then it'll get mixed up with other cards, and you probably, like, you'll trash it with Calculus, and then you won't have it anymore. And so then you'll have to look for another Emperor card. So, I mean, like, those things can be a little bit tricky too. Maybe that's the only Emperor card that shows up besides Calculus. And then you're just, you know, Calculus is just an okay, two persuasion card that trashes cards, which is fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the two persuasion, like, I mean, I'm so biased. Holy shit. But yeah,
I mean, yeah, yeah, you know, I think Beast Worlds, like, I think with, you know, more experienced players, it's like, it's definitely like people can keep track of where your Beast Worlds is. So, like, when people know when you have your Beast Worlds, they'll obviously just like commit more, right? Because they're like, oh, you know, we know you have at least three swords, right? So when they can track that you have at least those three swords, it's like, well, I'm not getting any rewards for this anyway. So now I've just wasted a card that has three swords on it, no persuasion, and I'm not getting anything off of it, right? Unless you have the rainbow, I guess. If you have the rainbow of combats, then, you know, you can play it and get, like, the effects off. But, like,
yeah, that's a really
when that card is trackable, it feels so weak.
It does, yeah, it does. Well, people will just either let you have the combat, or they won't let you at all. Like, you win the combat, you don't want to win the combat by, like, 10 daggers. Like, you don't want to be that far ahead of everybody, really. You kind of want people to go in and fight for it and then beat them. Like, you kind of want them to commit. But if people are just going to limp in and then let you take it for 10 daggers and everyone else is like at 2 and 3, that's not good. More likelihood is people will know it's there and just highline you. Like, and then you will be in trouble. Like, so, I mean, that's why I say it, like, it works best early on. Like, I think it's a better early on combo if you can get that to align correctly in your deck. But otherwise, I'd say, like, you know, it's not a bad card. I'd still pick up Beast Spoils every once in a while, especially if I'm like leaning into even a Fremen deck. If I was leaning into a Fremen deck, I picked up Long Live the Fighters or even Chani, like, you know, a reveal of Chani Beast Spoils, like, that's pretty good. Keeps your troops alive.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a powerful reveal, but obviously not going to get the Fremen bond with Chani doing that, but, you know, whatever.
I think it comes to a point where, like, a lot of times, like, you feel like there is a correct play based off of just like 100 games played. Like, you know, like, one play to buy a certain card will get you a higher chance of winning, but then, like, there's the other like part of it. It's like, do I try and, like, build this combo that might be less efficient or, like, less, like, probable, but might work synergize with my deck better? And it's like, for me, it's so hard to, like, break that gap or like overcome that boundary of, like, taking that leap of faith to, like, buy that card and say, like, oh, I can maybe play around this. Does that make sense? Like, where I think it's like the people that, like, win the games a lot, like, they're like almost like not afraid in some situations
to
go
definitely.
For it. And, like, and it's like,
well, because the upside is so massive. Like, if you can get them to work together, you get those cards in your hand at the same time, you know, then you have a huge advantage over people who are just playing, like, regular old non-synergistic cards. Like, that's I think the thing to do is, like, just pick something. I think maybe my best advice for players who are getting into Uprising and want to try getting into some strategy, like, deck building, is pick one of these core cards we've been talking about, you know, in Fremen, maybe like a Maker Keeper or, you know, an Unswerving Loyalty or a Mala Pistol. Like, start there. Get a couple of them. Obviously, don't just blindly go for, like, even Unswerving Loyalty, I think, is fine to just buy. But, like, don't blindly pick up a card that requires synergy for it to be good. Like, I think picking up, like, a Tread in Darkness, hoping that, you know, you're going to get your Bene Gesserit cards, your Prepare the Ways to align with it, that's not really worth it. Like, again, like, as mentioned, getting a two-cost card, playing a two-persuasion card to hopefully draw into something better is usually not what you should be doing. You should be playing those one persuasion cards to draw into two persuasion cards. Like, that's ideal. Like, to shape your hand to buy Spice Must Flow. But it's just so awkward when they're on two persuasion cards, right? You just don't want to play them. So, but, you know, pick up those Southern Elders. Like, that's a great core card for Bene Gesserit and Fremen Bond. Like, you know, pick up. I like singing the praises of Still Tent. Like, I think Still Tent is excellent. It's a Fremen card. It gets you troops. It gets you water. Water's hard to come by. Like, It is a little bit restrictive in that it's yellow, but you just trash your dagger, or not dagger, your Dune out of your deck and you're good. Or even that Northern Watermaster. Anything that gives you passive bumps on reveal, mm-hmm. or passive or just effects on play, like that give you resources, those are very good, especially early on.
Yeah.
And lean into those, you know? Like
I think one of the questions that I want to like ask is like, say you're sitting on like 7 persuasion, right? It's like this like question about like taking risk, right? Sitting on 7 persuasion, you see Interstellar Trade, or you see like Ecological Testing Station, Northern Watermaster, and Unswerving Loyalty. Like, are you picking up just Interstellar Trade, or are you picking up like that bond? Because the Ecological Testing Station bond, I think the Fremen bond is good itself, right? You know, has the water on reveal. But you know, Northern Watermaster too, the Fremen bond reveal, and the fact that it plays for water. Like, are y'all more likely to pick up like a bond synergy, or just like a, you know, straight up just like one card Interstellar Trade, call it a day?
That's a tough one. So for me, I would always pick up an Interstellar Trade over a combo, just because it's a very flexible card. I think Interstellar Trade, like one of the best cards in the game, just lets you get bumps when you can't get bumps by going to tracks. Like it's basically a diplomacy, but it goes elsewhere. So it's slightly better in a lot of ways, because most of the board spaces like that get you Solari, and Spice and Worms and those things. You don't usually get the chance to go to get bumps. So it's flexible in how it lets you kind of fix your influence problems. I love Interstellar Trade. I usually don't get it because someone else beats me to it, but I would pick that one up over a combo. Unless, like, I mean, if I had 7 persuasion, I would. If I just didn't, I wouldn't go for it. I don't think I would go for Interstellar Trade. I think I'd try to settle on, like, you know, a Northern Watermaster, Ecological Testing Station. Like, I'd go for a 6. I think I'd go for a combo 2 cards. Or maybe even a combo, like, a 5-cost combo. You know, like a Maker Keeper Watermaster. And just start trying to find some more Fremen. Because even having those two in your deck means you're probably going to get 2 Spice. Probably. You're going to get a ton of water. I mean, Maker Keeper gets you what you need. If you get that influence eventually, you will, most likely. Or even the Ecological Testing Station is a great one, because it gets you the extra influence for Fremen, and then the Maker Keeper will get you the Spice. So I might do that, but I don't know if I'd go out of my way to try to hit Interstellar Trade, especially if I had a good chance of whiffing. And then someone else like picks up the other cards for, you know, instead. So I might be a little bit wary about doing that.
For me, it's so hard to like. Oh, and I think for a lot of people, like, it's so hard to visualize like the gain you can get from buying like 3 cards versus 1.
Yeah.
And also just the increasing for a beginner getting into the game, to buy 3 cards, the amount of deck management that you have to do to keep it in play, it's hard. If you're good at it, and you can do it, and you can also like. It's so hard. I'm stressed again to see the perceived benefits of buying 3 cards versus 1, because you're buying the cards that have supposed synergy together. So it's like, if you view them all individually at their face value, of course they're gonna be weaker than the 7 coster. But like, there's the other side that's like, if you know what you're doing and you can do it well, you know, and you can deny others from getting those cards, right? Because a key thing is that. It's not easy to get 7 persuasion in a round. So you might be able to deny somebody else from getting Water Master, which, I mean, hell yeah. Like, I don't want someone else to get that strong of a card, in my opinion, for that cheap. It's the good thing about Fremen, I would say, is that it gives you the ability to, like, go to desert tactics and trash and, you know, keep your deck manageable. But, like, yeah, you know, like the deck can, if you, once your deck starts to get to like 13, 14 cards, 15 cards, like it's like you're grasping it.
It's
like
usually bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Like a nothing almost. It's tough.
I'd say like 12 is where I start to go, well, I got to cut some things.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like you really want to be able to keep your next hand visible. Like you want to know what's coming up. Like if you have 10 cards in your deck, I'd say like that's perfect. Sometimes people like having 9 so they can draw their whole deck, but I think like having 10 is perfect because you can like kind of cycle between those two hands and know what's coming. But then again, I mean, it's not easy to do that. It's not easy to keep your deck at 10 cards and have strong synergies and make that work without taking a bit of risks, as you said, like taking a bit of a gamble. Like I feel like good about going into a Fremen tribal if I pick up a Mala pistol, for instance, because it replaces itself. And keeping in mind that Fremen bond, you only have to have the card in play or in reveal. So it can be the card, you know, the Mala pistol will trigger the Fremen bond. So if I had like Shishakli and a Mala pistol, I feel pretty good, you know, that I can get the Shishakli trigger.
I'm actually intrigued to think, do you prefer Mala pistol or Desert Survival, like in an early game situation?
Mala pistol.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I like Mala pistol.
I'd say Desert Survival.
Yeah, I think I know Dino would say Dino to Desert Survival. That's what I'm intrigued to see.
Interesting.
I believe, like, I think, you know, what you said is just like, you know, you're sitting on like 12 cards. Like, if you buy like a couple of cards and now you have like a Desert Survival, now you can like play the Desert Survival to trash. I think the trashing ability, you know, because like technically if you trash a card, you're like your future, you're drawing one more card, which is kind of like what a Mala pistol is doing, which it just draws you a card in the moment. But I think trashing is much stronger in Uprising because now you're sitting at like a 10 card deck, right? So if you have like another strong card in your deck, I think waiting to draw it with Mala pistol is so much harder than just like, oh, if you cut enough cards with, you know, Desert Survival, you just see it practically every round. It's like guaranteed. Right.
So I think Desert Survival too. I like both those cards, I prefer cards that draw me cards now versus cards that will draw me cards later. And that's just a preference thing. Like I think getting a lot of trash is totally fine, and getting cards that trash are good. And I think Desert Survival is a very good card. I think trashing cards is good. Yeah. I don't know if I'd have two of them in my deck, but I would definitely buy two Mala pistols if I saw one. Cards that draw into new cards that help me find my combos in turns I really need them, I find more value in those. But that's just me. I mean, like, you know, I see the value in Desert Survival as well. So
I think if I remember, like, I know Cheezable likes Mala pistol a lot. I think just like the...
Well, it's also the blue space, like because you can go to Arakeen with it and draw two cards, and that's very good. Or you can get you can use it to go get some Solari, or it's that card. Like the real reason I think I like it a little bit better is because if I accidentally open hand draw like my five and has like say Dune Dagger, Convincing, Diplomacy, and then Desert Survival versus that same thing and Mala pistol, I would be so much happier to have the blue symbol.
That's fair. That's fair.
And I think, like, obviously you're gonna be trashing Dune out of your deck, but I've been in situations where I've like got all these yellow access cards and no blue, and I just can't get my hooks. And so like Mala pistol for me just fits that kind of like play style, like where I tend to trash Dunes and daggers, but it also like gives me more flexibility for those blue spaces, which we only have two in the deck, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I generally like having a couple extra blues in my deck than yellows, but that's just me.
Yeah. I'm intrigued, CJ. Do you tend to hit Fremkit or Desert Tactics more in the game?
Oh, I like Fremkit better. Yeah. I mean, I hate being forced to play into a Desert Tactics, like. I really don't like that space.
Yeah.
I mean, I will do it. I think it's fine. I just hate being in the situation where I have no water going into round two. Like, really don't like that. I like trashing cards out of my deck. So if I get like a, you know, if I'm Paul, I think it's okay because I'll be drawing cards faster. And if I'm Fade, I hate it because I could just trash cards with Fade. And I don't think that's really, okay. I don't think I need to double trash. Like, you know what I mean? I'd rather draw cards with Fade and trash with his ring. Versus it's like the opposite, right? Because Paul can do the opposite. He'll draw. So I don't mind, I don't mind trashing as Paul, or sorry, Muad'Dib. But so that's my thought on it. I'd rather have that kind of like balance.
I think the double trash is like strong. Like it doesn't matter what you trash, right? At the end of the day, even if you're picking up like, you know, like decent bad cards, you're trashing, right? So it's like you're still ending up at a 10 card deck. So double trash with Fade, I think is like, I mean,
it's good. It's good. I agree. I just don't like not having water. And if I was going to not have water, I'd rather have maybe I'm thinking of this a little wrong. Maybe I'm thinking that I should be having more water with Paul, not less water. So maybe I should hate having no water with Paul. I don't really like Desert Tactics as a space in general, but sometimes you have to go there to block people. And that's not something I like doing, but, I'd rather go Fremkit.
And also it's under like a beginner's perspective, like just thinking about it, like the perceived benefit of a trash it's like it's not immediate, right? It's like later on you'll see the benefit. So it's so hard to like go for that play over like say like worms or even like research station. I feel like it's like so appealing. Mm-hmm. So I think it's like one of those things that like I've come to appreciate more as I play the game. It's like, oh wow, that trash like early game can be so effective to help me continue on. But it's like especially initially for me when I was playing the game, like I felt like, oh my god, I'm giving up a worm for this. I'm giving up potential to draw two cards at research station for this. Like it's tough, but
yeah. Yeah, for me, I think it's just getting a trash is good, but definitely the value of that space goes down over time. I think like round one, it's the most reasonable thing to do. And every once in a while, you know, you might need to do it if you're like flush on water. You might need to do it just to get some combat strength, or you have Chani or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. Like you might need it. I just don't like that space as a value space. And I think that maybe Cheezable would probably agree that it's kind of a weak space. I don't know. Not he's like the authority on that space, but I think that he did talk about it in his one of his recent videos. He talked about how it's just kind of a weak space. So,
I mean, if we're talking like authority on that space, I think Lannister is a good one. I think I know Lanny loves like that space. Like I know Lanny was preaching this too. Like the one combat, I don't know what it's called. Actually, let me search it up. But it's like on contract, like it gets for winning, it's a mouse combat. If you win it, you get a contract, a water, and a trash. If you get second, it's like water, spice, and trash. Like I think, like those two, I agree with Lenny on this. Like that combat, I think is very strong. Like it doesn't matter when it shows up. If you can get first or second in that combat, like with the worm, I mean, you're setting yourself so nicely, right? Now you get double trash, you get the double water as well. Yeah. Right. Like I think the trashing part of this game, I think, is like so much more, you know, useful because the deck building is so much more stronger. Like, I don't know if like I'd rather see more cards by drawing or I'd see less bad cards by trashing. That's like an argument to be made, right?
That's a really good point. Yeah. I guess so. Like, I would rather see less bad cards, honestly. But I don't usually get to do that. So I have to settle for my default is buy cards that draw cards, because when I draw cards, I have more options and I go through my deck faster, which lets me find my combo pieces faster. It's like trashing cards also does that as long as you eventually draw cards, which could be, research station or some other great card like a leadership, you know, or you have steersman, which could get you like a ton of values. I mean, we've hardly talked about that, but we don't really need to. It's just a good card. But or captured Mentat. Like if you captured Mentat and get some good effects off of that. I mean, I like trashing cards like very well. I like doing that. But I also feel like if I can avoid spending water early, and that I think is my biggest problem, is I will spend water early, but then I like feel that I need to go hit deliver supplies like right away. Otherwise I feel like I'm screwed.
This is also why I prefer desert survival over like null abyssal, because you know you can get the trash off or like the calculus power without having to, you know, go to desert tactics to spend the water. Like that's why I prefer these like trashing cards.
What would you take, desert survival or calculus of power?
Well, calculus.
Okay. Yeah, usually when I get a chance, I usually see them, or I'll see like calculus of power and desert survival. If I can get like a Mala pistol and a calculus, I'd take that instead. And there's two calculus in the deck, so it's not like it's not that hard to find them. But you're right. I mean, those are good cards to
I mean, sometimes you're not playing calculus for the trash. Like you're playing the calculus to, you know, has a spy access, right? Like the fact that it has spy access is so strong. That's why I'm breaking calculus over desert survival, because I could always place a spy on yellow and then go there with calculus, which is exactly what desert survival could do. But calculus also has the ability to go to yellow, to blue, and then maybe even like a faction space.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Agreed. All right, guys. Yeah, did you have any final thoughts to wrap up this episode of Spy Satellites?
I think I love card combos, but I really love like opening theory and really like the psychological like between players, like that part of the game too. So I really I want to stress how important it is to like interact and play and even talk with your opponents while you're playing. I think that's like a
table talk.
Yeah, I'm a strong proponent of table talk. So I think it's like when you're building these combos, it becomes even stronger when you can get a feel for what your opponents are doing. Is what I think what I'm trying to say with this.
Yeah.
Especially for beginners, it's like knowing that like if I'm gonna go for a combo that goes for like a combat route or for like a spice of soul route, to understand that, oh, are my opponents playing more combat focused or not, and to gauge that, which is really helpful if you can do that in the beginning of the game, to set your sights for the win.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Like one thing, I mean, even though we're talking about card combos, as was voted on by our Landsred, the main thing here is that while these are fun and good to do, sometimes they can lead you into problems.
Yeah. Oh my god!
Right. You can try to do too much. You can get too many Fremen, and then you just have a bunch of like desert symbols, and then nothing else. Or you can get a bunch of Emperor cards and have very bad access for the rest of the game. Like there are situations where you can get into trouble, or you can get like spy cards and then have other people block you from the spy spaces you needed. There are lots of problems with going a just combo route. So go into this with that kind of in mind, that if you see these core cards we're talking about, some of these like repeated cards, Calculus of Power, Bene Gesserit Operative, maybe even Desert Survival or Maul Epistle, things like that, you can use those in your strategies and kind of like pick and choose as you go. Like, oh, maybe I'll just have a one or two card combo. Maybe I'll just get Unswerving Loyalty and Maul Epistle, and then I'll just build good stuff. You know, so you don't have to go heavy into one particular tribal way or anything like that. You don't have to do that. And I think that that's just the best way to think about Uprising. It's about pivoting. It's about reading the board, and it's about reading the other players. And obviously table talking is very important in the situation, of course. But yeah. Well, thank you for listening, everybody. You have been listening to Spy Satellites. I'm CJ. Thank you all. And we will see you on the next one. Take care.